Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
On the Louisville Cardinals Sports Network from Learfield, this is the Coach Dan McDonald Radio Show, brought to you by Parler. Also brought to you by Kroger, fresh for everyone, and by U of L Health, official healthcare provider of the Louisville Cardinals. Now live from Parler, here's the voice of Louisville Cardinals baseball, Sean Moth.
And hello and welcome to the Dan McDonald Coaches Show here live for Parler in J-Town. So glad you've chosen to join us both here in the restaurant and on the airwaves. Head coach Dan McDonald, we just spoke with on Wednesday as well as yesterday following the game. So he's passed the torch to his assistant coach Adam Vrabel in his 10th season at U of L. Adam, great to talk with you. Great to have you here.
I appreciate you having me here.
So I'm not one to make excuses. People know that listen to me on the radio broadcast. And I know the coaching staff isn't either. But I do want to say this. I haven't seen many teams better offensively than the Virginia squad that just left town. Now, I know that there were things we needed to do from a bullpen standpoint, from an offensive standpoint that was frustrating, but it seemed to me that that was an awfully good team. Even though they lost a bit off of an Omaha run, they filled in some spots pretty nicely.
Yeah, they did a really nice job. And, you know, what they did a really good job of is controlling the strike zone from an offensive standpoint. And you know, that's a big thing. Obviously, we talk so much about even in our hitters is being able to command and control the strike zone, see the ball out of the hand, know what a ball and a strike is, and then obviously it makes your decisions a whole lot easier. And then, yeah, if you put yourself in a position to be in advantage hitting counts, which they found themselves doing, it makes things a little easier. But, yeah, kudos to them. They had a really nice approach, stayed over the plate, stayed through the middle of the field, and got their swings off.
What did it tell you about your team that – Friday was so rough, especially that ninth inning, to come back and maybe on the heels of Pat Kelsey's first pitch, get out, jump on them early, and even though there was a little stumble there in the eighth and ninth innings, you just pretty much dominated that entire game.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for every time we go out there to compete. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Obviously, when you're home, you're trying to get in the dugout as quick as you can and let us grab our bats and helmets and get in the box and be offensive. And, when you can do that early on arms on opposing teams, yeah, that's, you know, we kind of flipped the script on them, you know, what they did to us. And, you know, we were able to do that to them on Saturday. But, that surely helps, when you can get in the dugout and obviously the electricity, the juice is flowing in the dugout and you can put some runners on and then you got to cash in. And that's what we were able to do.
And I'm assuming you're the one that taught Ryan McCoy his power. Is that accurate?
Actually it is. No, Ryan, that's the thing, too, with these guys. And that's what's great working with them. And Ryan's a junior college guy that's came in. And, he had to work for everything he got at the junior college level, put himself in a really good position, obviously, comes to Louisville and has high expectations, as all of our players do. And, it's really nice to see him piece that together. And we just want to help him sustain that throughout. But, yes.
I said on the broadcast, I almost wish I could have been a fan for that home run because I just wanted to just admire it and stand on my feet. Because you see home runs, they're impressive. I know in the Pizza Bowl we had some that were really crushed. But when you see a ball like that, like the one he hit at Duke, it's so rare to see a ball hit that far and that hard. Do you find yourself as a coach just maybe staring at it a little bit, admiring it?
I'm not going to lie to you. There's a few balls that I've done that with, and Brendan McKay hit a few of those.
Yeah.
As did, Drew Ellis and a couple of our guys. But, yeah, it's, you look, as I'm at first base, I'm looking whether they're righty or left-handed batters. I'm trying to look for things that I've worked with them or the coaching staff has worked with, or we're trying to address those things in, because we're trying to help those guys pitch by pitch, at bat by at bat with adjustments. So, yeah, when you see that, it's almost like you see it happening right before it's happening. And, obviously, we work with these guys so much, and we're invested in them as they're invested with us. It's, you know, you share that with them. You share that moment with them.
Is that as exciting for you as seeing him hit a backside single against a shifted infield? Is there a mix of joy with that one?
I tell you what, it would depend on the situation now. You know, we got runners on and we need that, yeah. But, you know, the real thing is if you're being able to do both of those.
Yeah.
If you're being able to do both of those things. And each guy is working on different things and having to make adjustments in different ways. But, you know, when you can do those things with runners in scoring position, you know, that really helps. So, oh, man, we like seeing the ball fly out of the yard. But from time to time, just the backside ground ball does so much wonders for your swing and your approach.
In general, I'm privy to the scouting report because it helps me as a broadcaster know pitch selection and that. I don't read as in-depth on the details on the doubling up on the off-speed pitch and ball and dirt reads. I'll pull pieces and bits and pieces from there. But I feel like what I've seen a lot and what you just see in general in college baseball is what I joke about is called Dixie baseball. Look away, yeah. Look away, look away. How hard is it to condition kids to take that opposite field approach? Because I use Eddie King Jr. as an example because I feel like he's maybe the best when he's at his best. Going to right field, mm-hmm. and he did that with this home run. We've seen that so many times when he has those 2-3-hit games. Usually they're all to right field. I see other guys on the team maybe struggle with that a little bit. How difficult is that to get into their heads?
Well, success helps, right?
Yeah.
Obviously having some success with that. You know, and as a coach, you're just trying to put your guys in the best position to succeed. And then, again, we're getting a full-on scouting report, and, you know, we got some guys behind the scenes that are doing a phenomenal job with that. Mike Allman, our director of baseball development, that player development, does a phenomenal job piecing together multiple different, you know, from an analytical standpoint to a scouting report standpoint on pitchers and defenses and all this stuff and placements. So he does a phenomenal job with it. But, yeah, there's a piece to it from a scouting report standpoint that, yeah, why is this pitcher successful, right? And it goes back to even the high school days. I mean, if you've never seen a batter and you're pitching to a batter, what's the first pitch you're probably going to throw him? Fastball
yeah.
away. And if you don't stay on that ball or you can't stay through the middle on that ball, they're just going to keep staying there,
yeah.
staying there. And if you don't make an adjustment, they have no reason to get off of that pitch. So, yeah, that's the message to our guys is you're going to have to be able to stay on a pitch middle the other way with some conviction and then make them do something maybe they're not really wanting to do or maybe
yeah.
they're not comfortable doing. Yeah. So, yeah, but it comes down to putting these guys in a position to stay over the plate, out in front, middle of the field, because then, again, even if you're late, now you can shoot a ball the other way. If you're a little early but you stay on the baseball, now you can take it down the pole sideline. So it's about putting our guys more in a position, helping them know what's coming their way, and then just being able to work through the middle, as we say.
Were you stubborn when you were an underclassman listening to coach tell you to look for the pitch and hit it away?
Yeah, I mean, as a younger player, I mean, I go back. I tell my guys all the time. I mean, now it's crazy because I say 20 years ago, and I'm sitting there scratching my head like, oh, my gosh, 20 years ago,
yeah.
right? But, yeah, and I'm sitting here going, hey, man, there's a reason why I didn't maybe get the opportunity, you know, for X, Y, and Z purposes. So, hey, man, I'm trying to help you because I've been through this before. I've been through it. I've seen others succeed more than me, and – thankfully, you know, I say thankfully, but, you know, I've been a part of some really good baseball here at the University of Louisville. And, you know, credit to staff and players for it. But and that's what we use, a reference to a lot of our
sure.
current players is guys that have walked before you, laid the foundation before you. And, hey, it wasn't a big bed of roses for all these
mm-hmm.
guys. I mean, they had their ups and some downs. And we're just trying to keep them more even keel than having to go low and having to go high. Just keep them right in the baseline because it's a long season. You know, you're talking about 56-game slate, and I wish I could keep every hitter going for 56 games. But, again, I don't have the magic sprinkle dust there. But
yeah.
more often than not, man, we want to have those guys be in that position. So, yeah, like I said, it's just helping these guys, you know, maintain and be consistent.
We've got questionnaires with pencils. If anybody has questions for Coach, we'd love to have them, and we'll answer some of those maybe just for the folks here. Adam, you're one of the people that benefited from an NCAA legislation that was long overdue for 3 full-time assistant coaches. I never liked the volunteer assistant title. I think it was a little demeaning for the work that you do, the hours you put in. But I know our coaches aren't siloed in what you work on, but at the same time, there are specialties. So talk a little bit in detail about what you work with specifically and maybe the evolution of your job and how it's changed now that you are a full-time assistant.
Yeah, so my first coaching opportunity was was in the state of South Carolina at Furman University, and they don't have baseball anymore, unfortunately. But yeah, from that standpoint to moving here, you know, I did that for several years at the mid-major level, and one was at an academic institution where we were underfunded baseball-wise. So you're talking about private institution, not fully funded with baseball. So, I mean, it had a lot of challenges. But again, the love of the game always comes back to you know. And obviously the love of the kids and the development of the players. But yeah, being able to experience that, being at a military school, and then being able to recruit at a Christian school at Charleston Southern, and just, you know, some different dynamic stuff. So yeah, when we made the move to come here at Louisville, yeah, I always had that on the back of my mind. Like, you know, you're doing all these things, but being able to recruit and help that stuff. Really what that is, you know, you just want a helping hand. You know, you got guys on staff that are doing a lot, putting in a lot of hours, a lot of time, obviously for the love of the game. And obviously there's family dynamics in that. But you just want to help. You know, you just want to be a part of that and help in as many ways as possible. So, yeah, they let you kind of work camps. You're a little limited on that, but you're able to get out and get camps. You're able to see some kids and familiars, either, you know, locally or maybe that you wanted to recruit. Sure. Pockets. And, you know, we do so well in the state of Illinois and Indiana and Ohio and with my ties in Michigan. So, again, we have the Midwest kids sprinkled in some from Maryland down to Florida, of course. But, yeah, you see a long overdue. It's just, like I said, it's an opportunity to get out. And really what I like about it, too, is you see so much in social media players coming to you. Now it's a chance. It's an opportunity for me to see these guys before they get here.
Sure.
And to even communicate and talk to those guys before they get here. So now I have a lot better idea of who I'm working with when they get to us.
Yeah. Dan claims to work with the infielders and base running when it goes well, but when it doesn't, he blames that on you. But you work with the outfielders primarily. talk about some of the other responsibilities specifically. I know that the defensive alignment is something that kind of falls on your shoulders as well.
Yeah. I, like I said, I've been here. I've been fortunate and blessed. I've been here for 10 years. And, you know, with this staff, with Coach Williams and Snyder and Mac, everybody's open. I mean, we talk so much about it. I mean, really, I played infield. Coach Snyder played infield. Coach Mack played infield.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no ego here. It's all about, hey, we just want to help these kids, put them in a position to succeed. So, yeah, I mean, I'm constantly learning. I don't have it all figured out. I like to think I have it for the most part, but, you know, we have so much that we can learn. So, yeah, constantly, the coaching staff, even Coach Williams, I tell him all the time, hey, you have something you want to say to the hitter that you see? I mean, by all means, I always tell our guys, I go back to when I was a player and I had a pitching coach that would come up to me and he might have only said like a sentence, but I'm thinking like, if he came up to me and said that, it must be of some importance. So as I communicate with the pitchers, as all the staff does, the same thing goes. I mean, we just all help each other with that.
Analytics. Mm-hmm. I talked with Dan a little bit about it. We've talked with Mike Allman on the pregame a couple of times. There is a lot to digest. Dan, we talked a little bit about finding the balance of concerning yourself with analytics and then just understanding swing mechanics and getting off a good swing. Is there a balance? Does it depend on the player?
There is, and you just said it. It really does for me. It depends on who you're communicating with. Sometimes less is more, of course, right? And that's the fun as a player, as a development with players, trying to help those guys, what makes those guys click. So, yes, communicating – then showing them, letting them go through it, dialogue back and forth. And, yes, the analytics comes into play too. So, you know, you have some that are no analytics, and then you have some that are high in analytics. I personally feel there's a healthy balance of the two. And, again, how are we communicating with these guys? And at the end of the day, it's about helping these guys get it. And sooner rather than later, of course. So there's a healthy balance to that. And it goes into the scouting reports as well. And it goes in, I know you mentioned about the defensive alignments and stuff like that. And, yeah, once you get to this portion of the season, you know, we're looking at a lot of balls that are getting put in play. Because the reality is if they're not putting the ball in play, they're probably not getting many at-bats. But, yeah, and the numbers will just tell you the likelihood of where the ball is going.
Well, and let's get into that specifically, because I know folks have seen the players take a card out of the back pocket, take a look at it, put it back in the pocket. This is a through-the-lineup defensive positioning based on tendencies. But it's more than tendencies. The database you guys have literally gives you spray charts for every ball a guy has put in play over the course of a season. So when you see the three infielders over on the right side for the left-handed hitter, that's because 98% of the time the ball is hit over there. How much work goes into putting that card together? Because those guys just glance at, oh, okay, that's easy.
Yeah, well, and again, once you, and it's a lot of information that you're looking at, of course. So, you know, it's what information do you want to know? So, especially now we're in the ACC play, and obviously our opponents, you know, you're looking at the schedule, you're seeing it. I mean, we're facing guys with some really good numbers. You know, I'm talking about velocity numbers, and not only that, obviously spin rates are high. You know, people talk about the spin rates of the baseball, and you have all speed pitches. So again, it goes to the tendencies of that. So there's different things that I'm looking at, especially at this time when I'm putting these cards together. But yes, the percentages or the likelihood of where these balls are going, and it's a two-way street to it, because I tell our guys all the time, when you're looking at this card, this is solely based on what the hitter has done up until this point. So I'll even tell you, it's no real secret. You're looking at it, you're finding out who the runners are, who are the speed guys. You're looking at who the bunters are, whether they're a bunt for a hit or a push bunt, a drag bunt, or maybe they're just sack guys, sacrifice bunt guys. And then, yeah, it goes right into shifts as far as slight pulls and middles, and our guys all know that. But then there's a different dynamic to it. So you have that. Then you have our pitcher, mm-hmm. and some of the things that maybe the numbers will say against them. And at this part of the year, our guys have a really good idea of what we're doing. And then, yeah, then they're looking at the wrist and they're getting a pitch. So as much as I talk about it, hey, our guys have to constantly move because you can't give locations and pitches away. So there's really three things that are going on. Rather than just looking at the card, that's the first thing. Then you got to have a good understanding of who's on the mound.
Yep.
And then on top of that, yeah, what pitches might be being thrown.
How does Adam Vrabel, the player, utilize those tools? Because I'm sure you had them to an extent, but not nearly to the extent you do now, if at all, in some cases.
Back then, for me, it was do this, and I did it. You know, it was one of those things. And when
But like the value of seeing what pitch is being thrown, how, as an infielder, that has to be invaluable.
Exactly right. You know, and again, as an infielder, before all this technology came into play, you're trying to look in, you're trying to see signs. So yeah, if you had nobody on and you're just going off of one finger, one sign, it was relatively easy. The problem is if you picked it up and you started to move, you're tipping to the other team on what pitches you were probably – and if it wasn't maybe the pitches, then you're probably tipping locations. Sure. So you had to be really, really careful with that. But, yeah, it does. It helps. It helps having everybody on the same page, and they know what can happen.
We've got a few housekeeping things to pass along, because if I don't do it now, I will forget. But there is a game tomorrow, in case anybody didn't know. It's Louisville, Kentucky, the Battle of the Bluegrass, I think the 115th edition. So that is a 7 o'clock first pitch. Great Day Live, WHAS, will be out there tomorrow from 9 to 10. So if you happen to be home, can watch that, maybe set the DVR and take a look at that. That should be fun. They'll be at Jim Patterson Stadium. And we're not yet confirmed on which Brom is actually throwing out the first pitch. We think it's Jeff. It could be Brady, as powerful as he seems to be. Brian has a pretty good arm. And don't sleep on Greg, great athlete as well. But one of the four Broms, probably Jeff, is going to throw out the first pitch. So you want to arrive early if you're headed to the ballpark. We would certainly love to have you. We'll have more with Coach Adam Vrabel when we come back as the Dan McDonald Radio Show rolls on. Welcome back to Parlor in J-Town for the Dan McDonald Radio Show. Sean Moth here with you, along with assistant coach Adam Vrabel, talking Louisville baseball. And we talked about the defensive alignment. I got to ask you guys shifted pretty heavily against guys like Jacob Cozart, the talented catcher for NC State in the sweep 2 weekends ago. He laid down a bunt against you. Is that gratifying because you forced him to do that, or is it frustrating because he gets the job done?
Well, it's gratifying. It's gratifying if he either fouls it off or he puts it back to the pitcher and we get him out. That'd be gratifying. A lot of times, again, that comes back to the analytics side of things. The chances and likelihood of him, one, squaring around to bunt, and two, putting that down. So, you know, if you're forcing other players to do things they're really not comfortable doing or really wanting to do, you know, for the most part, I like to think that kind of favors us as so even what we talk about our guys about offensively is, yeah, you start to see, they're shifting Alex Alessio. They don't even have a shortstop. So yep. I'm sitting there scratching my head. Yeah. His first at bat, he just hits one right through the six hole, and you're sitting there going, I'll take that.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, like I said, and to be honest with you, yeah, when you see shifts like that, some players look at it and it kind of messes with them a little bit, you know.
So on the broadcast, I always hesitate to talk down to baseball fans because we've got a lot of really knowledgeable and good fans. But at the same time, people pass along to me that there are those that don't really follow the game, that appreciate learning things about the game. As a first base coach, can you talk through just some of the responsibilities that may be obvious to a hardcore baseball fan? Obviously, letting a kid know on a ball that gets down if he can take a look at two, if he should go to, that type of thing, getting back on pickoffs and that. But talk us through just a little bit about your communication with the player.
It's constant. I really enjoy it. One, because you're on your toes, but you have more awareness the whole time. And I'm not saying you don't have that at third. But, man, once a player either is moving to you at first base or they're on first base, there's just constant communication coming from everywhere. So, yeah, and then your involvement, you're looking on the field. We tell our players all the time, the best game is, or the best report is a report that's on the game itself. So if you're watching this and you're starting to see things, body language from the opposing teams or coaches and – and that's just some of it, right? You get guys that are coming down the line, and there's tag-ups, there's fly balls, there's tips that I'm looking for on the pitching staff.
Sure.
Maybe I'm trying to take advantage of if we can run on them. They're doing X, Y, and Z when they're pitching, but they don't do it when they pick. There's certain things that are constantly happening. So, like I said, it's a heightened awareness when you're over there. And guys will say it all the time, and really what I like doing is almost being looking like I'm not doing anything over there, just standing there looking in the clouds. But really, I'm trying to pick up.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look elsewhere. I'm trying to see if there's anything on the field in which I can give our team, our kids, an advantage on.
And that even gets to a point where maybe a catcher just moves a little bit a certain way on a pickoff. There are pitchers that'll take an exhale before they pick. There are pitchers that flutter the glove. There are a lot of tips in that are really interesting, an interesting aspect of the game. You occasionally move to third to coach when Snides is on the road recruiting, or you guys need to mix up the mojo. Is it a little more nerve-wracking over there?
No, it's not nerve-wracking. My biggest thing is just with the angles of it. And I had done it previously prior to coming to this staff. Obviously, Coach Snyder does a heck of a job with that as well. It's a different angle. It's different. It's different over there for sure. And I haven't had too much experience here. I say experience, but I haven't had too much where I've done it on the road. So the biggest thing is just angles, right? What you're used to seeing. Jim Patterson Stadium, it seems to me like a lot of teams are playing deep. They're playing deep.
Yep.
They're playing deep. And I push our guys to play. I want our guys to be able to run back on balls. But, yeah, you go to a place like Clemson, and those fences, it's a shorter porch. And balls that are hit through the four hole that have a little bit of steam on it, yeah, you may not be able to send them. It's just different. It's a little bit of a different dynamic, but that's why I really try to get my reps selfishly, really through in the fall time. And, we go to the Dominican this fall, and Coach Snyder was out on recruiting trips, so I was able to do that all year. But I'm comfortable over there. I am. It's just different.
We obviously know you like to talk, so take me through the umpire at first and the first baseman for the other team, and how talkative you get. Do you chat them up? Does it depend on the guy?
Yeah, it depends. One of my favorite players from an opposing team was Alex Terrell.
Okay.
Alex Terrell, he kind of was like me. You strike a conversation, and boom, all of a sudden, you got something going on there. But, yeah, I try to at least get a conversation started with the umpire. Because there's things that I need him or I want him to know that could happen, because I don't want something to just spring up and he freezes up on me.
Sure.
So I'm trying to
– The old Bach move.
Yeah, I'm trying to subtly, hey, man, just help me out with the move here and help me out with this, and can't let him do that. So I'm kind of planting the seed early on. And it's not like I'm trying to manipulate him at all by any means, but I want to heighten awareness that, hey, he could lift a leg and just show you something. All of a sudden, boom, kind of come over and use a slide step, but really kind of the direction goes to the dugout. So it's more of just having him have a heightened awareness of what could be coming his way.
Pre-game IO, in and out, when you get the fungo out, you hit to the team. I did happen to notice you clocked Ali Say on the shin and I think Gavin on the foot. These guys have gotten more and more bold, closing the gap at second base to kind of make you shoot a field goal. And to a point where Ali Say straddles the bag. I mean, do you kind of like that challenge there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, I love that. And again, that's just something that we do as part of it. But, yeah, I love the challenge. I love the challenge of that. So, yeah, what the middle infielders will do is they'll pinch right on second base, mm-hmm. and Alex will almost straddle the base. So, yeah, they're wanting me to ground ball right through, right over top of the base. So I always tell them, don't move, don't move. And my ball seems to have like a little inside-out tail to it. So Gavin stands obviously on the shortstop side, so I try to hit it right at him because the ball is going to peel right back over the bag. And I've been telling those guys not to move, not to move. And for the last few times, they've been moving. And, yes, Sunday, they didn't move. I think I hit Alex maybe right in the shin. And then did Hoy didn't move either. I think I got him right in the leg. I might have hit two of them. So I know the opposing team was probably like, what? But I am worried about them. It's all about our guys. So.
That's the fungo to the center fielder there. Yeah. How about the catcher pop-ups? There's a lot of pressure there at some of those ballparks that don't have the netting.
No, I love it. You know, I love doing that. Like I said, I always joke with the players. Like, I mean, I can run out there and just hit the fly balls and then run off. And but no, I enjoy it. Like I said, there's a competitive edge to coaching too. And you know, there are a couple of guys in the league that I know when we hit in and out, it gets a little personal. I mean, I take it that way. I'm not gonna lie to you. Like, I get a little. I want to make sure I beat him in the catcher pop-up. Some don't try it, but some do. And then next thing you know, I notice he's taking a few extra swings in catcher pop. So I'm going to make sure I'm going to try to one-up him there.
Vrabe's got his journal, 2-for-4, you know, compared to the other coach. All right, Kentucky, Tuesday at Miami. We haven't been there since 2016. It's kind of a quirk of the scheduling and COVID. We've had 13 of our 15 against ranked opponents. Obviously, at Miami is not an easy place to play. What are we looking for from the team this week?
Well, you said it starts tomorrow. I mean, obviously every game from here on out's big, but we don't want to make this game any bigger than what it is. I mean, obviously you got two really good clubs that are going at it. They're having a heck of a season up until this point, no doubt. But again, like there's really nothing that has to be said about it, right? I mean, obviously in-state rivalry, two teams, like I said, it's going to be a good atmosphere. I'm hoping everybody comes out to support. Good baseball and support the student athletes, that's for sure. And and then you move to the weekend, and again on the road, ACC. I mean, we're gonna embrace that, and that's a challenge that we want to take on. So
Mark Light Magic, we'll see how it goes. Finally, I know this is a long story to tell, but if you can maybe give me a quick version for those that don't know, you didn't just go to Omaha in 2017, 2019. You made an extra trip to see the alma mater. What was that like for you?
I did. Yeah, that was, oh, my goodness. That's a moment I'll never forget. You know, I've been fortunate. I've thrown in a home run derby contest when I was at the Citadel with Bo Thompson. And then, yes, I was able to go twice here as an assistant. And then, yeah, to be able to fly in and see my alma mater play Texas Tech that year, and that was the year they ended up coming out of the loser side of it, the loser's bracket. And you know what's odd about that real quick is when I walked in there and I hugged the coaching staff and I looked in, it took me back. Mm. And just the things that were happening in that dugout and how the players and the coaches were talking and communicating, it took me back. And obviously, you know, Coach Gilmore has done a fabulous job there in his tenure and obviously for the game of baseball. And I love that man dearly. He's done so much for me. Things that he doesn't even know about, but what he's helped with me on and off the field and that staff and that place, you know, obviously that's what I'm looking forward to and wanting to do for our players.
National championship for Coastal Carolina. I'm glad you got to be a part of that. Adam, appreciate your time. It's great to talk with you, even though it's not breakfast on the road, right?
You got that right, Sean. Thank you so very much for having me on.
Adam Vrabel, our guest. Be sure to grab him if you have a question for him. We'll have more with Isaac Humphrey and Kate Grundy when we come back on the Dan McDonald Radio Show. Welcome back to Parlor in J-Town for the Dan McDonald Radio Show. Enjoyed our time with Adam Vrabel. Now we're going to speak with junior/senior. This whole COVID thing's got me messed up. But with the redshirt year, those COVID players are nudging by. But Isaac Humphrey wears number 51 on his back. And he is from Livermore, Kentucky. I got to get this straight now that we had a little hometown controversy. I got to clarify.
Yeah, so my first couple years here, I had Calhoun down, which is my actual address. But I had some people from Livermore that got a little upset about that, so I had to change. So my house is technically closer to Livermore. My dad owns a store in Livermore, so I kind of had to show some faith to them, I guess.
It's not confusing at all. He went to Owensboro High School, it all makes sense. So tell me about what you've been able to do for guys like Michael Lippi, Corbin Dickerson, and maybe some of the guys that are redshirting this year to help them get through that season, because it's something you experienced. You had the benefit of having Beard and Benson with you, but at the same time, it's not an easy year.
No, it's definitely not, because probably for the first time in your life, you're being told you just need to sit and wait. Ever since you start playing baseball, obviously the guys that play at this level, they're hugely successful early on in their careers and in high school, and they're used to being the guy on their high school team. So to come in here and be told, hey, we like you as a player, we like what you're doing, we think we can use you, but we need you to sit and wait for a year. You need to get better. It's challenging to hear as a young guy, but I look back on it as one of the best years of my life. So to be able to just kind of help Lippi and Dickerson both out with it was something that I really took a lot of pride in. I know that I had some older guys as a freshman that really took me under their wing, Benellis, Luke Brown, that really helped me get through it, and it was hugely impactful for me. So just to be able to kind of give back to them a little bit, give them a little push every day was really important to me.
Does it help when coach can point to a big leaguer like Drew Ellis and say, yeah, we told him to sit down?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that always helps, always.
Yeah, no question. Coached by Logan Johnson in high school, I don't know how much you and Coach interacted, how many stories he told, or what role he played on maybe getting you to Louisville, but just talk a little bit about Logan, the Hall of Famer at the University of Louisville.
Yeah, I don't think he liked to talk about it too much. Everybody knew who he was. We knew where he played, everything, but he liked to be Logan Johnson, the Owensboro High School baseball coach, and that was his role every day. But he brought something invaluable to the game. He knew the game very well. He knew how to coach. He knew how to just communicate as a player, obviously, from everything he learned here and in pro ball. So to be able to just have that guy kind of in your corner a little bit really helped. And as I was getting recruited by Coach Mack in here, he was able to offer some really great wisdom that I really enjoyed.
Did he share with you that he holds the College World Series record for home runs?
He did, yes.
Okay.
We knew
I would
that,
hope.
That was one, like I said, he didn't like to talk about it too much about his time here just because that's who he is. But, yes, we knew that.
Did you attend baseball camps at U of L?
Not really, no. I early on in my high school career, like as a freshman, I came up here, and that was where I – my first encounter with Louisville, yeah.
Okay. You had an experience at the Cape Cod League. What was your summer in the Cape like?
I loved it. I mean, it was a unique experience for sure. I've never been in that kind of setting before, obviously. So it was really cool to go up there, and obviously you're playing with guys from all over the country. We had an older coach from the West Coast, Kelly Nicholson from LA, and so he liked to pick up his West Coast kids and bring them with him. So we had a lot of California kids, and it's crazy how to see things that are different about the way they do things, and then some things that just translate across the country. So it was a really cool experience.
Yeah, the 60 feet, 6 inches, the 90 feet, there is a lot of corollaries, but it is interesting to see different culture. Mm-hmm. As somebody that grew up in Colorado, went to college in L.A., and now has lived out here for 25 years, that's got to be unique. Did you face Grundy?
He's not in his head.
Uh-oh.
I did. I guess
we'll
I
hear
did.
From him. I think
I
it was a better memory
remember.
For him. His numbers were pretty good. I don't know.
We'll
get that out of him. How has your approach changed as you've matured at U of L in terms of both baseball and just what's changed from you personally and in your life?
Yeah, I think this year, coming into this year especially, is with the way last year went for myself and the team, it was more about trying to enjoy it more. It got really stressful last year. I put a lot of pressure on myself. I know other guys did. So the big thing that Coach Mack really harped on it too, but for myself, was just to enjoy every moment. Be where your feet are, like Coach Mack says all the time, and just try to have fun, because at the end of the day, nothing's guaranteed after this year. We're going to play, I don't know, 20-something games left maybe. And after that, you never know.
Yeah. So we talked about analytics with Coach Vrabel, and some players embrace it, some players not as. Where do you sit on that? What do you think about analytics, and what do you learn from them, or do you?
So I like it a little bit, not too much, but I like it more, I would say, on the defensive side, honestly. Yeah. As an outfielder, I like to know that, hey, this guy hits a lot of balls. As a right fielder, he's not going to hit a ball down the line too much, so I can cheat a little bit. It makes my job a little bit easier. And obviously Coach Vrabel's great with that, with reading a scouting report and then giving us a little bit of information. So I always enjoy that.
What does the game tomorrow night mean to you, playing Kentucky?
I mean, it's always a fun one. I've been fortunate enough to play them a handful of times. We always have a great crowd. It's a great atmosphere. It's a fun rivalry to be a part of.
Do you have a favorite ballpark that you played in?
Ooh. Other than, obviously, we got to go to Houston last year. That one's up there.
It's not bad.
But other than that one, probably Florida State. I've been there twice. Just the environment, the setting of there, it's really awesome.
How about uniform? You guys are spoiled. You got a lot of great uniforms. And we felt like the rotation was set. All of a sudden, we're going Pins, Patriotic, Astros. It was a good combo this weekend. What do you like?
I'm a big fan of the Astros.
Yeah.
They're just kind of like we've always worn them, and I like the way they fit. I like the way they feel and look, so I'd say those.
How about the clubhouse, what Henry Davis has done for this team? What does that mean to you? What's that like?
That's sweet. Like, obviously, I was fortunate enough to be around Henry a little bit as a freshman, and he was such a competitive player. And to see him go about his everyday life and how great he was at just the little things. And so for him to give back to us and to kind of pour into us a little bit it's amazing.
Are you superstitious?
A little bit, yeah.
Routine or superstition?
Routine,
okay.
More so.
Can
more
you
so.
Share some part of your routine maybe that people might kind of say, oh, really?
It's more, I don't guess I have to do anything really strange, but I like my time in the Hack Shack before we go out for BP. I have a certain little tea routine I do, a little stretching routine, and one of the days that I can't do that, it just kind of throws me off a little bit, so I'm a little rattled, but yeah.
Was that passed down to you from someone, or is that something you've always adopted?
No, it's just something I've kind of developed over the last couple of years.
All right. So. Isaac, we really appreciate your time. One more thing. You got your degree last year, you're telling me?
Correct, I did. I was fortunate enough to graduate in 3 years with a sport administration degree, and I'm currently in a human resources master's program.
That is fantastic. Much better man than I. Congratulations, and good luck with finals.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
Isaac Humphrey, our guest. We'll roll on with Cade Grundy when we come back on the Dan McDonald Coaches Show. Dan McDonald Radio Show rolls on, live from Parlor in J-Town. Great crowd here tonight, enjoying some pizza, some wings, saw a couple salads, and we can't miss out on those cold beverages. I think I saw an old-fashioned over there. That sounds like it might hit the spot, at least for those of us that are allowed to do that sort of thing. Cade Grundy joins us now from Somerset, Kentucky, junior right-handed pitcher. Let's just get it out here now. Cape Cod League, you had 2 summers in the Cape. You faced Isaac. You remember what he did? He doesn't, but it sounds like he should have.
I remember all of it. It was like 3-1 changeup. He hit it up the middle for a single. And then the next one, he grounded out to second base.
He just hit the changeup because he got fooled by, thinking it was something else. Is that?
Yeah. A little out front, I'm sure.
That's fantastic. I never ceases to amaze me how, especially pitchers, can remember things like that. I think, I'm trying to think if it was Sean McVay, coach of the Rams, where they would tell him a play in a season and he knew what play he called.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself remembering everything like that or just with certain instances?
No, only in sports. School, not really, but obviously I remember most of the cool experiences in sports, and that just happened to be one. That was the only AB or 2 ABs he got off me that summer.
Did you have fun in the Cape?
Loved it.
Yeah. I got to ask you about this. There's a rumor buzzing around that your name, image, likeness agreement with some folks in the hometown of Somerset, Kentucky, have taken care of you a little bit. Is that rumor true?
Probably. Yeah, I haven't looked at it in about a month because you usually get like a form or whatever. But
I heard you got a little transportation assist. Is that
This is news to me.
All right.
I'm unaware.
All right. Isaac's playing with me then. We'll leave that one go. ACC academic all-academic team, I should say. Are you still a business major?
No, sport administration.
Sport administration, yeah. Okay. Sometimes those don't get updated, and I'm just as guilty of that as anybody. I want you to talk a little bit about your dad, because Dan McDonald played against him when he was at Western Carolina. He described Phillip Grundy as a dude. He was SoCon tourney MVP, 2-time first-team All-League. He was an All-American. He was kind of a Brendan McKay type two-way player. 6 years in pro ball, played at Omaha as his home stadium in Rosenblatt. Just tell me a little bit about his influence and how much he talks to you about his playing days.
More than you can imagine. He likes to, you know, let me know how good he was, and he'll call some of his former teammates just to let me know how he was in college and in pro ball. But, no, like, he's been an important role, obviously. He's been the head coach at my high school, Somerset, for, I think, going on 20 years now. And so as a young kid, I was around baseball growing up. Never got to see him play, unfortunately, but, you know, being around those high school kids when I was, you know, 6, 7 years old, I mean, you learn a lot, and it was just a great, you know, experience for me, and something I'll never forget. I mean, he calls me all the time after outings, and, you know, he watches, obviously, even though he'll have it on his phone during while he's coaching and, you know, not paying attention to his own game.
Well, you know, you got to have priorities.
Yeah, but, no, he gives me a lot of pointers. He helps me. I mean, obviously, as a pitcher, you go through a lot of struggles, you know, bad outings, good outings, or whatever. But, and he's the one person that will call me and, like, give me pointers. I mean, he'll tell me when I do bad. He'll tell me when I do good. Yeah. But, you know, he keeps me in check.
Jeff Conine, Kevin Apier, Jermaine Dye, and Jeremy Giambi among his teammates during his pro days. He pitched in pro ball, but over his time in pro ball, he hit .444. Do you think he picked the wrong one?
He'll tell you he did. I mean, he was – I think he had a few DH All-Americans in college.
Yeah.
He likes to think – he tells me all about his stories. Because he played at Somerset, he had a home run about 600 feet to right field as a right-handed hitter, which is actually impossible. But he still tells that to this day. But, no, yeah, he'll tell you that he might have chose the wrong side of it.
In 1993, he had a 3.12 ERA in college, and he hit .333 with 17 home runs. Mm-hmm. So Phillip was definitely a dude – the high school, you guess the Breyer jumpers?
Mm-hmm.
That's wild. What kind of logo you got with that?
It's a rabbit.
All right.
It's I think I was a sophomore or junior in high school, and they came out with an article of, like, the craziest or most unique high school mascots, and we were, like, top 10, which I can see why.
Sadly, I know two others. One of them's in Montana. It's the town of Polka, and they are the Dots. And another is my rival in Fort Collins. They're the Lambkins. And we were the Lobos. Like, there was no chance. I mean, a lamb versus a wolf? You got to be kidding me. Last year against Miami, you come in Friday, 3 innings, no runs. You mow them down. You pick up the save. Does that make it a little more exciting to be headed their direction?
Oh, yeah. I love, obviously, going to Miami, too.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
It's a great place to be. My dad, I think, played against them, and he talks about it all the time. But that was just one of the better outings I had last year. And obviously, still having that in my mind, I want to, you know, try to recreate that in whatever form I can.
How much can that do for an athlete, for a pitcher, to have a good memory of seeing a uniform and remembering a good performance against them? Can it influence you more than you think?
Absolutely. And same thing with Kentucky. I mean, I've been able to, you know, pitch against them, pitch well, and hopefully tomorrow when we beat them, I'll be able to do the same thing.
Part of the shutout last year you pitched, and I mean, as somebody that's from Somerset, that's not far off from either campus, is it a little more exciting, this game mean a little more to you? Do you have to kind of help the Zion Roses of the world understand this, or does everybody kind of get it?
I think they kind of understand. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people were able to go to the football games, basketball, everything. I mean, you grow up and you understand there's college, you know, rivalry, and we're top up there in every sport. So I think everybody on the team kind of understands how big of a game it is for us.
Before we talked on the air, you were telling me about your basketball days, and I seem to recall you're one of the top scorers all time at Somerset in basketball.
Number one, yeah.
You're telling me a story, though, about a rather prominent guy you competed against that now wears blue. Tell me a little bit about that.
I played Reed Shepard 3 of my years in high school, and unfortunately we only won one of those games, but my senior year I had, I think, 34, 33 against him. He had 43, but I was able to put up some points against him.
So we always want to hear that Bivens, the great basketball player on the team. How do you stack up? Who's the best basketball player on the team?
Oh, I'll never give anybody on this team any level above me in basketball.
That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. I see you play a little hoop? A little bit? Is he legit here, this roomie? Is he? All right. I believe you. What's the game? Is it a three-level game? Are you a shooter? Mid-range?
I'm more of a mid-range, but my brother was one of the three-point guys, but I was – because actually my brother's number 3 all-time scoring in Somerset history. So little brother's got a lot to live up to, unfortunately.
It said you were a Star Wars fan in your bio. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Tell me your favorite movie.
Return of the Jedi.
Okay. How about your favorite series? There's a lot of really good
TV
ones.
TV series?
Clone Wars, Ahsoka, Mandalorian.
The Bad Batch. I don't know if you've ever watched that one. The cartoon.
I haven't yet. How about your favorite uniform of the cards?
I like the new ones that we got. The red tops. I'm not sure what they're called with the white pants with the red and black pins down the side.
Cade, thanks for your time. We appreciate it. Cade Grundy, thanks to Isaac Humphrey. Thanks to Adam Brable. We'll see you at the ballpark against Kentucky tomorrow. So long, everyone.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.